Welcome to Podcast Gurus, brought to you by GHA Marketing. Our guest today is James Critlin, editor of Pod News. James is a radio futurologist, a writer and speaker and consultant concentrating on the effect that new platforms and technology are having on the radio business across the world. Today, expect to learn the importance of open podcasting for future growth and accessibility and YouTube's entry into the podcasting space, including its potential impact on the industry. Discover the difficulty in monetizing podcasts due to the inherent limitations in tracking listenership and the discrepancies in reporting and analytics across different podcast platforms, particularly Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You hear the passion in my voice because we at GHA know how big of an issue this is. And it's really interesting for James' perspective on how this is just an industry-wide issue. Before we begin, please remember to subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you're there, please also leave us a review. 5 stars do amazing things for the podcast. Podcast reviews are just like SEO backlinks. So they help get you seen and on all the algorithms and whatnot as well. So there's a little bit of insight for you. And if you could do that for us, that would be amazing. Because we're going to keep bringing you all the different ways, different gurus in the podcast, because we're going to keep bringing you all the different ways gurus in the podcast industry are explaining how to make your podcast a valuable asset for your business. And with that, here's James.
James, thank you so much for coming on the Podcast Gurus podcast. That's a lot of podcasts in this title. You are quite a particular guest on the show. So can we maybe start a bit differently than the previous episodes? Can you start by please introducing yourself and explain us what you do?
Yes, sure. So, and it's wonderful to be on. So my name's James Critland. I'm editor of Pod News, which is a daily newsletter all about podcasting.
Love that. So let's jump straight in then. What's the story of Pod News? Can you walk us through what is happening there?
Well, yes. So I've written Pod News now for 7 years, I think. Started doing it in 2017. So my maths isn't great at the best of times, but I think that that's about right.
Correct.
And I started doing it actually because, you know, my background's radio. I've worked in radio for many years, and I was at a radio conference in the US, and I was chatting to a friend of mine in the bar afterwards, and he said, "Where do you get your information about podcasting?" And I and he both realized that there was no one doing news about podcasting, and I thought, well, there's perhaps an opportunity. And so I think it took me 2 weeks to do a little bit of tech to produce a newsletter that no one was reading about podcasting. And now I've got more than 30,000 people who are getting the newsletter every single day, which I've written every weekday for the last 7 years.
And that is quite impressive. So lots to unpack here. I love this. Not only Pod News, right? Because in 2023, Pod News acquired the Podcast Business Journal. So you can add a good 9,000. So here it's a weekly newsletter, right?
Yeah. So Podcast Business Journal is for the business of podcasting. It's very much focused on the business news that you may have missed during the week. There's an interview in there as well every single week of someone who is in the leadership of podcasting. Podcast Business News, very much focused on the US market. Pod News itself, as you can guess from my accent, I've got a British accent, but I actually live all the way down here in Australia, which is a fun place to be. And so Pod News itself, it basically covers the world of podcasting.
So Australia, where literally everything is trying to kill you. That's why you say quite a funny place.
So they say, yes, absolutely.
So you're covering basically the actual three main English-speaking locations with coming from the UK, so you have roots there, covering the US markets and Australia by living there. Is it a strategic choice for your career, James, or how did it all happen?
Well, and also I used to work for a Canadian radio company, so I think I get at least four in there. No, but I think, you know, it is interesting looking at the podcast market here in Australia. It's a very vibrant and exciting market, as it is, of course, in the UK and, of course, it is in the US. So I think, you know, it's very interesting broadening out the conversations around podcasting so that it's not just talking about what's happening in Brooklyn, which many other people end up doing. It's talking about all of the different podcasting industries and markets across the world, including France.
Why Why is it the switch from radio, though? Because as you can, I mean, as we can all imagine, radio was big, especially back then. So why, what made you want to take the jump and go full steam into podcasting, where actually nobody was doing any newsletter, right? So maybe there was a reason behind that. So what made you decide?
Yeah, I mean, so firstly, there was obviously an opportunity there, but also I think, you know, I've worked in audio. That's what I work in. And if you have a look at how people are consuming their audio these days, I mean, in America, for example, more people now consume on-demand audio of whatever form than live audio. So radio is still very large, still 9 out of 10 people tune in to the radio every week in most large countries. So there's nothing particularly wrong with radio, but there are lots of different ways of consuming audio these days. And I saw a real opportunity in terms of podcasting because it's a very different market. It's a very different in terms of, you know, anyone can produce a podcast. You don't have to convince a station director. You don't have to convince a programmer. You don't have to turn up in a studio late at night. You know, anybody can do it from the comfort of their own home. And I think that that's the important thing there.
What have you learned running this podcast news website and newsletter every single day, every single weekday, for 7 or 8 years, depending on the math of everybody?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, obviously I've learned a lot about the podcast industry, but I think from the point of view of making a podcast, and I make a daily podcast as well, I think quite a lot of it is around making sure that you are sustainable, that your creativity is a sustainable thing, both in terms of revenue, of course, but in terms as well of time. It's very easy to burn out. It's very easy to do things in a very inefficient way. And I, you know, everything that I have focused on the PodNews newsletter has been making sure that I can do a good quality job every single day. And I might be, you know, on a plane, I might be flying somewhere, which I was a couple of weeks ago, I might be working for a different company during the day, but I still need, you know, the time to actually put a newsletter together. And so a lot of it has been really making sure that I can produce something which is consistent, comes out at consistently the same time every single day, making sure that the product itself is as consistent as possible, and be really deliberate in terms of how you do that, in terms of how you reach as many, you know, how you reach as many people as you possibly can, but do it in a way that won't kill you after 5 or 6 episodes.
How much time does it actually take you to build that daily newsletter? How do you actually make sure it goes live every day, more or less at the same time? Where do you get the information? Like, it's the chicken and the egg, right? How do you, as the first podcast newsletter editor, make sure that you have the latest information, which are also accurate, right? And not like just kind of trying to find whatever blockbuster news is appearing. How do you handle all this?
Well, I mean, so in terms of editorial, a lot of it in the early days used to purely come from Google News Alerts, from RSS feeds. You know, I've been writing about the world of radio for a long, long time. So actually, I already started with a lot of news news organizations that I knew I could get some really interesting stuff from. Now, of course, I'm also getting an awful lot of emails, and that's great, but also bad, because it means that I'm getting, you know, hundreds of emails every day that I now need to go through, as well as the RSS feeds and everything else that I end up checking. So that's been a little bit of a challenge, shall we say. But in terms of the amount of news, I think what's nice is that there is always news every single day in terms of the podcast world. Now, that may not always be big news from the US, and that's probably a good thing. It's probably good that we can actually focus on something weird that is happening in Sweden, or, you know, having a look at the Indonesian podcast world every now and again. You know, that's quite fun. So, you know, I think compiling that every day has been really interesting. You asked how long it takes, and it can take probably about 1 hour is the minimum that I would need. And I have occasionally put an entire newsletter together and recorded the podcast version in 1 hour in an airport lounge. Probably wouldn't recommend that too much. But it also depends really, you know, how much time I've got. And for example, today it's the end of a Monday. I've probably spent somewhere in the region of 7 hours on today's newsletter. And part of that has been some of the tech work behind how the newsletter gets published, has been, you know, researching some of the stories, researching some of the information that I have, updating some of the articles. So really, it can take as long as you need it to.
Wow. So that sounds like a lot of work. You have a daily podcast next to it. So what are the kind of lessons that you could teach us podcasters that are applicable in the newsletter world and in the podcast world? Because I'm going to chat it a little bit later on, but those two worlds can be very linked. So how do you recommend people and podcasters managing their time, preparing for the interview, getting everything live without putting in jeopardy all their personal life, or if they have a job next to it, as you were talking earlier? How do you do all that?
So, I mean, quite a lot of it comes down to, you know, the time of day it comes out. Happens to be the early morning in the US, happens to be 6 a.m. New York time, 7 in the summer. That's how it happens to be. But the reason why is that it's 9 o'clock at night, my time. So I know that I've got all day to work for somebody else if I need to, in order for me to then come home. And by the way, it's quite rare that I do work for somebody else, but still, I can still come home. I still have the time to put something together so that it gets published at 9 p.m. So the time when it comes out is really important. The format of what it looks like is also really important. It's very short sentences which are linking off to stories elsewhere on the internet. That's the point of the newsletter. And there have been others, and, you know, Podcast Business Journal was an example of that, that used to be a traditional news, you know, do a traditional news job of reading a press release, rewriting that press release to make it a full story, doing a little bit more research and everything else. That's absolutely fine if you've got the time to do that. I couldn't get that as a business to ever work in any of the previous websites and things like that that I've been working on. And I knew that that wouldn't work here either. And so the format of it, very deliberately built to be sustainable. The time when it comes out, very deliberately built to be sustainable as well. In fact, the reason that there's a podcast isn't really anything more than I needed to read it out. I needed to read out the newsletter. Once you have written something, if you read it out, then you notice the mistakes that you've made. You notice that you could have actually phrased something in a better way. So I was reading it out anyway, and I thought, well, you know, I mean, I've done radio and things in the past. Why don't I just read it out and record it at the same time, and then I can put out a podcast? And that's exactly what I ended up doing. So, you know, that's been great fun to do that sort of side. But again, that comes down to making sure that I'm not taking any more time than I absolutely need to in the uncreative stuff so that I can focus on the creative process of producing something, to the point where I host the podcast myself on my own technical infrastructure. I've got a complicated, you know, scripts that I've written that encodes the audio in the right place, uploads it to the right place, adds it to the RSS feed, does all of that completely automatically so that I don't have to waste time with any of that stuff. So, you know, again, it's really focusing on getting rid of as much of the non-creative stuff as you possibly can so that you can produce a really good creative piece of work at the end of it. And I think that works for any podcaster, whatever show that they're actually putting together, trying to work out how you can avoid all of the tedious button pushing in order for you to actually produce something which is just a better thing at the end of the day.
Wow. So that sounds like a very complex but complete process. Do you have people helping you with all these, James? Because like a daily newsletter and podcast sounds like a ton of work.
It's just me. Yeah, it's just wow. Me. So, yeah, I think there have been a few times when I've had to get an AI version of me to read it out because I'd lost my voice.
Really? Did that work? Did people notice?
Oh, people noticed or asked the wife to do it or whatever. But no, but it really is only me. And I think, you know, there is a lot to be said for finding some experts, paying the experts to do a great job. I'm very lucky in that I happen to have a background which includes writing very quickly under pressure, doing things behind a microphone and understanding how that bit works, but also being a website coder. So I'm very lucky to have those three skills. And really, this has enabled me to use all three of those skills in a way that, you know, hopefully produces something, well, you know, over 30,000 people get it every single day, you know, so hopefully that is pleasing those 30,000 people or so.
Well, I am a member or a subscriber for 6 months, and I'm pleased, James. So at least if that's worth anything, you have one feedback. Here we go. So what have you seen as trends in the podcast world since you started in 2017 and even a bit before, but like since Pod News? What are the trends that you've seen in podcasting since?
Yeah, and I should say I started in podcasting in 2004. I started writing an RSS feed for the radio station that I was working at. We put it live in March of 2005. So I haven't come at this, you know, completely as a random journalist in the middle of nowhere. And I think really the trends that I've seen, of course, we've seen an awful lot of consolidation in the market. We've seen a lot of overheating in the US of companies jumping into podcasting when the money was free, jumping into podcasting and seeing what they could do, and then suddenly realizing, actually, you know, it's not quite as easy as we thought making great audio and getting that to pay. So I've seen an awful lot of change there. But I think from the point of view of what excites me about podcasting, the fact that it is open, the fact that anyone can do it, it's still perfectly possible for any independent podcaster to produce something which just works and works fantastically well and reaches an awful lot of people. So I think from that point of view, it's been a very useful experience in just watching how podcasting has grown. And still seeing that the roots of podcasting are still here today.
So when you say money was free, what do you mean exactly? And what did companies try to do just for the sake of my own curiosity?
So we've just come out of a period where interest rates were pretty much zero. So if you wanted to borrow money, then you could borrow it pretty well for free. The amount of money that you were spending in those interest rates were so low that it didn't matter that much. All of a sudden, interest rates go up, and all of a sudden, borrowing money isn't free anymore, and it costs money, and all of a sudden, the stock market stops going for growth and starts going for profit and says, we don't care how much you're growing. The focus now is for you to make profit, and you have to be making profit. Hence why the big changes that Spotify has been making. Last year, they made 2,300 people lose their jobs. I mean, that is a tremendous amount of people to leave a company just purely so that they could chase the profit that the stock market was chasing them for. And of course, if you've had a ton of podcast companies jumping into this space, wanting to earn money from podcasting, that's great. But actually, at the end of the day, it does need to pay for itself. And so I think that's where we've seen the overheating. But the overheating really has only been in the US. I think European podcasting has grown a bit more cautiously, has watched what the US has been doing and learned from some of their mistakes. And I think that actually, you know, the European podcast market is in a significantly better state than the US podcast market, you know, has been in. So I think it's good news from that point of view.
I love that. As a European, obviously, let's dig a little bit into this. I find it super interesting because the company you mentioned is Spotify. So the big actors of the place that I can think of, like the size of Spotify, just to name Apple Podcasts, for instance, or all the big hosting platforms as well, a lot of them are US based. So what have you seen in Europe doing okay or better than the US as companies in podcasting?
I think that there's a couple of things. I think firstly, the success of fiction podcasts in Europe is something that hasn't really happened in the US. And I think that, particularly in France, there's an awful lot of really good fiction podcasts being produced, which is great. I think on the second side, I think when you have a look at the way of paying for things, I mean, firstly, Europe is the home of Acast. It's a Swedish company. I mean, it's also the home of Spotify, if you're going to be accurate. But it's the home of Acast, who really pioneered a way of earning money from podcasts by putting dynamically inserted advertising in there. That's been interesting to watch. But also interesting to watch has been the more recent companies like Podimo, for example, which is a company based out of Denmark that charges a subscription fee to access some of its shows. That has been very successful for them in quite a few European markets. And that's something that the US hasn't really cracked. There was a big company called Luminary, if you remember, in about 2018, 2019, and they launched trying to do much the same sort of thing. Dismal failure, never really got anywhere. Whereas you have a look at the success of Podimo in the markets that they're actually in, and you can see that there's definitely something going on there. So it's been interesting seeing, you know, just the differences in between how Europe and the US have actually worked and how different things work in different countries.
I love that. So it's interesting to see the way you describe it, James, because obviously you're much more knowledgeable than I am when it comes to the world trends and country and region by region. But so,
well, I don't know. I can only speak one language. So, you know, there is always that.
So the most important one, maybe along with Chinese soon. Anyways, that being said, so I have the feeling that the business model behind podcasting in Europe feels like it has been something built around a podcast production, meaning, hey, we're going to produce great shows and we're going to monetize them. Whereas in the US, just thinking about Spotify and Apple Podcasts, it's more like, hey, how do we enable podcasters to do their job? And we're going to take our share, a piece of the pie from that. Saying this, but then there is Acast in Sweden, which is indeed also basing itself on the same model. But like, how do we do podcasting, US part and business model around this? Podcast as a monetization media or monetized media in Europe, kind of. Am I in the right here, or am I completely lost in the geopolitics of podcast?
I think there's definitely something there. And I think what I find interesting, you know, having grown up in the UK, where the BBC has no advertising whatsoever. So 50% of all of the media that I consumed on the radio when I was growing up had no advertising on it. I think there's a big difference between, you know, markets like the UK and much of Europe, which is much the same sort of experience, in comparison to the US, where everything is plastered with advertising. And so people instantly think that the only way of earning money from their creative endeavor is to get it advertised on. And I think that that's a different conversation in Europe. And I think that we have understood that there are many other ways of earning money from our creative work. And I think that that's been a great benefit. The advertising, the slice of advertising pie is far, far smaller in Europe. And that actually means that, you know, us creators understand what happens in terms of subscriptions, what happens in terms of, you know, can you produce a book from your podcast? Can you turn it into a live show? What else can you do, you know, around what you do? Can it actually sell things for the business that you also run? All of that kind of stuff is really interesting. And I don't think it's necessarily in the US psyche, who have always turned around and said, well, we can just stick some advertising in there and it'll be right. So, you know, so I think that there's definitely something there. And I think also radio stations jumped into, particularly public service radio stations in Europe, jumped into podcasting very early on because they could see some real opportunity there. Public service radio stations in Europe are massive, huge radio stations in comparison to the US, where NPR, you know, it's I think it was a 12% share last time I looked. I mean, if you look into, you know, Denmark, for example, then Danish radio is something like an 80% share. It's a tremendous difference. And so I think, you know, again, I think that that, you know, clearly changes the way that an industry grows. And I think it's interesting, you know, the French example, for example, of seeing how in the French podcast market, there are really two separate types of podcasting. There's what they call native podcasts and radio podcasts. What you call native podcasts and radio podcasts. You know, a native podcast is something that has been made as a podcast. A radio podcast is a bit of what I rather cheaply call reheated radio. That has been broadcast on Radio France or on BFM or whatever it might be, and then turned into a podcast, you know, after the fact. And I find it fascinating that, for example, in France, they are two completely separate markets with their own different measurement platforms, you know, and that, you know, the French market is the only market that has this concept of a native podcast.
Really?
So all of this I find fascinating. Yeah, you know, you can have a look at other markets, and you can very clearly see some reheated radio in the top 10, but they're very much part of the overall podcast marketplace. And I think it's a little bit different in France. Maybe a good thing, maybe a bad thing. I don't know. But it's always fascinating seeing the differences in each market.
100%. Yeah, we French like to do it differently for better and for the worse, for sure.
Well, you know, you have CKAM television instead of PAL. So yes, absolutely.
But so that's funny. I mean, so I'm coming from a finance background, and I remember seeing lots of like conferences at events being transformed into podcasts as well. So would you put this into a kind of a native podcast format, or would that be different than the scheme that you just explained for the radio? Because in my mind, it's the same.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something which has been then produced into a podcast. I think one of the things, you know, that I'm very keen in doing is getting the most value out of the content that I produce as possible. And the same goes for conferences, the same goes for, you know, radio stations, for newspapers, for everybody else. Can I make an audio version of this, which is actually interesting and exciting? Can I take what I put on a newsletter and turn it into a website? Can I also then turn it into an RSS feed? What else can I do with it? You know, and I think that there's an awful lot to be said for all of that. And I think, you know, there are a bunch of conferences who are doing something quite similar, you know, in terms of, you know, how that works.
Love that. So James, here is a maybe not so softball for you. Is the fact that you read your newsletter a native podcast or a reheated podcast then?
I mean, it's a native podcast in that, I mean, it hasn't been broadcast anywhere before. I mean, you know, interestingly, there is a version of the daily podcast that I do that does get broadcast on the radio in the UK. And so that's quite fun. But part of that is because I understand how the UK broadcast law works. And I know what I can say and what I can't say and what I'll get the radio station into trouble for. So there is always that too, I guess.
Absolutely love this. What's the future of podcasting, James, as you see it?
Oh, well, I mean, if I could tell you that, I probably wouldn't be here, would I?
True. And hopefully me neither, because you would be sharing the secret sauce and we would just be, you know.
So, what is the future of podcasting? I mean, I think that we have just come out of an experience where Spotify and to an extent Amazon and to an extent a few other people have tried, and Luminary and others have tried to do exclusive podcasts on one particular platform. And we've seen Joe Rogan, and we've seen, you know, Call Her Daddy, and all of these things be exclusive only on Spotify. And even Daniel Ek realizes that that didn't work. And he even said that it didn't work for creators. Creators want to be heard across as many different platforms as they possibly can. So I think we're seeing, thankfully, an end to the erosion of the open podcast ecosystem, which we saw, and instead moving back to a world where podcasts are open, where you can say, listen to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and you know that it'll be available on that particular platform. So I think that open podcasting is most certainly where the future of podcasting is actually going. The real benefits in terms of making that as open and as available on as many different platforms, as many different surfaces as you possibly can. And that's a real benefit, I think, and certainly where the future of podcasting is going.
Now, that is a super interesting point, because open podcasting, the fact that podcasting is open is very unique, right, as a media that size, at least. So you highlighted some of the benefits. What about the drawbacks?
Drawbacks are probably that it makes it rather harder to monetize. It makes it rather harder, particularly in terms of statistics. The best that we will ever get in terms of podcasting overall is a download figure. And a download figure is not a listen figure. A download figure just purely tells you that one computer has downloaded a piece of audio to another computer. And that's all that it tells you. It doesn't tell you whether it's been played. It doesn't tell you how many ears have actually heard it. And so that's always going to be a problem, I think, for the fact that podcasting is open. Having said that, around 60% of all podcasts are consumed on two platforms, Apple and Spotify. And both Apple and Spotify have play data. They have skip data, so you know where people are skipping the podcasts. They have data on demographics in Spotify's case. They have a bunch of data which is really useful and really helpful to us all. And they and you know, if we've got that data for over half of all podcast consumption, that means that we can pretty well work out what that data is going to be for all of podcast consumption as well. You know, just remember that, you know, if you have a look at radio, which is still earns much more money than podcasting, but you have a look at radio, radio figures are worked out by asking a very small amount of people what radio stations they listen to, and then multiplying that up by how many people live in that particular market. That's how radio works. That's how newspaper circulation works. That's how, you know, music sales used to work, you know, these tiny little samples. Whereas if you've got 50, 60% of the entire market, then you can actually get some pretty good data. So I'm not too worried about that, but it does make it harder. There is no doubt, you know, in terms of that.
So you touched upon something very interesting, and that we hear from our clients as being maybe not the number one pain points, but one of the top pain points in the podcast industry, which is reporting and analytics. So, and actually you mentioned some of those. So let's dig down a little bit on those two. Like, difference between a download and a play, and the kind of committed play, if you stay 20 minutes or I think it's 40% of the podcast according to Apple Podcast. How can we walk, not around, but with the data that we get as podcasters and in the industry, also for advertisers, right? And anybody evolving around the podcast sphere who needs to see, okay, this podcast gets that many downloads. Another thing I'd like your take on, James, is Apple Podcasts kind of, it's not via API, but they are a bit more open than other platforms when it comes to sharing a bit the information that the users have on their platforms. But Spotify is completely closed, for instance. So if we look at something like Listen Notes, they are basing themselves and their rankings, or Chartable or whatever, not to name only one, but they will base themselves only on Apple Podcast. In a case where a podcaster has pushed a lot on Spotify, external third-party platforms will not necessarily see what this podcast is quote-unquote worth in terms of downloads, and will just base itself on Apple Podcast, which might be biased. So how can we walk around this?
Well, so I think it's interesting. You talk about Apple Podcasts being relatively open. They're open in terms of the data which is in their directory, but they're absolutely not open in terms of any consumption data at all. So the way that Chartable, for example, works out its playback data is, and this is going to get a little bit techy, but you put a redirect in front of your audio file. So what's basically happening is your podcast player, whatever that podcast player might be, it might be Apple, it might be Pocket Cast, it might be Podcast Addicts, whatever it is, goes to Chartable first and says, give me the audio. And Chartable says, actually, the audio's over there. And so your podcast player goes off and gets the audio from over there. But Chartable has ticked a little box saying that's got another download. And that's the way that Chartable works. Lesson notes just make stuff up, so far as I can work out. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason in terms of how they work. They do have access to one podcast player, I understand, but they won't tell us what that podcast player is. Whereas we know how Chartable works. We know how Podtrac works. We know how OP3, which is an open version of both of those, work. So we've got quite a lot of data there that you can actually have a look at the entire market. I wish that Apple Podcasts was a little bit more open with their data, and there was a way of actually getting an API of data out of Apple Podcasts. I've asked them on numerous times for it, and they've patted my head and they've said, there, James, privacy, because that's all that Apple Podcasts cares about. And that's a great thing, actually. So, you know, so because, you know, Apple specifically is very keen on making sure that it isn't sitting there hoovering up tons of data, which it can then sell advertising with. That's not been Apple's strategy. That's not been Apple's plan. That is exactly Google's plan, and it is exactly Spotify's plan. I did some work a couple of years ago with the GDPR, another great European invention, asking Spotify and Google and the BBC and various other people, what data do you have on me, please? And all of them have bits on their website where you can request all of the data and it comes to you in a massive file. Spotify, for example, I discover, knows what type of car I drive because the Spotify app has looked at my Bluetooth connection, has worked out that the Bluetooth connection is a Toyota, and so therefore has me down in a cohort on their system that says that I am a Toyota driver. So, you know, it's looking at Twitter, for example, had a look at every single other app that I own and that I had on that particular phone, and knows who I bank with, knows, you know, who I insure the house with, all of this kind of information. So, you know, and Apple is thankfully very different in terms of that. It's one of the reasons why app developers get quite frustrated with Apple, because everything has to go through this process of, you know, checking through Apple. But it's for a good reason. And I was quite surprised at the amount of data that Spotify got from me, that Twitter got from me. Google has little recordings of me asking the, you know, the little Google speakers that I have in the house, has recordings of every single time I've asked that Google speaker for something. And you can go all the way back 6-7 years now. it's quite a thing. So yeah, so you know, and that's one of the beauties of podcasting, in that in most cases you don't have to be signed in to listen to a podcast. You don't have to be, you certainly don't have to give somebody your credit card information. And so again, podcasting is very open, very transparent, and can be very, very privacy aware as well.
Love that. Can you walk us through what an IAB certified download is, James?
Oh, yes. So the IAB is the Internet Advertising Bureau, and most countries in the world, not France, most countries in the world have gone with the fact that the IAB in the US has made a document called the Podcasting Measurement Guidelines document, which are guidelines only. So they're not rules, they're guidelines only. But in the guidelines, it says what they consider a download to be. And a download, a valid download, is something which downloads more than 60 seconds worth of data, and something which isn't obviously a robot. So if you listen to a podcast, probably that podcast app is going to download more than 60 seconds worth of audio, and in which case, then great, that is a acceptable qualifying download according to the IAB. What the IAB doesn't measure is it doesn't measure listens, and there is no current way of measuring listens on anything other than Apple, Spotify and YouTube, which will actually give you listen numbers as well. And if you look carefully enough, all three of those, certainly Apple and Spotify, certainly those two will give you 60-second figures as well. So someone who has listened to a podcast for longer than 60 seconds, they call them different things, which is slightly irritating. But that's what a IAB compliance download is. Now, theoretically, most of the podcast hosts who are out there are IAB compliant or IAB certified. Certified means that the IAB has looked at their code and has gone, yes, this is absolutely right. IAB compliant means that the podcast host reckons that it's probably okay, but nobody's actually checked. And so theoretically, you should get the same numbers from anyone that is IAB certified or IAB compliant. Guess what? You don't, because they're all still worked out slightly differently. They've got different lists of what is a robot, what isn't a robot. They've got different lists of what they accept as a valid download and what they don't. But they're kind of in the same ballpark, and that's probably about as far as we're going to get right now.
Talking about downloads and metrics and kind of stats, there is a big actor that's... I mean, I don't know if they're new in the place, but YouTube is trying to make their way into the podcast world. You can now host your RSS feed distributed through YouTube. They are pushing. So Google is shutting down Google Podcasts. I think that's last week. So we are recording it's the 8th of April today. Last week, Google shut down Google Podcasts in the US only. So there is a move towards YouTube. What's your feeling about this, James? Can YouTube impose itself as the main podcast actor, at least as soon as it comes to video as well? What's your feeling?
Well, I mean, this would be this makes it the fourth podcast app that Google has made. It had a thing called Google Listen right in the very early days of Android, which it then closed down. And then it had a thing called Google Play Music, which they only bothered to launch in the US. And then that closed down. And then they had a thing called Google Podcasts, which was very good, ended up being the number three podcast app. Still didn't get, it was still, 2 or 3% of the market, but it was still the number three podcast app. And after 5 years, they've closed that down. And now we're all supposed to be using YouTube Music, except in typical Google fashion, they've only bothered to launch it in the US. And the rest of us, although we've probably all got podcasts in Google Music now, it's still not really marketed or advertised at all. And so nobody really knows anything about it. I used to be one of Google's biggest fans. I thought that what Google was doing was amazing and brilliant. Now I look at Google and I think it's completely lost its way. And it's just a lot of managers who want to launch a new thing so that they get another promotion. And that really is how Google works now internally. And so, a very nice man launched Google Podcasts, did a brilliant job. That was a very standards compliant podcast app. It was very dull, didn't do very much, but it was a very good standards compliant podcast app. It was exactly what the podcast industry wanted. And after a nice man called Zach launched that, and after 5 years, Google has closed it. Now we're all supposed to be using YouTube Music, which it does play RSS feeds, but really what Google wants you to do with it is to upload your podcast into the YouTube system, where YouTube can sell advertising, YouTube can host it, YouTube can, because everything is sign in on YouTube, YouTube can, get lots of advertising data about you. YouTube can know that you listen to Shows à Savoir or know that you listen to the Joe Rogan Experience or whatever it might be, and then sell more advertising next to you. And as YouTube ends up doing that, it will put every single other part of the podcast industry out of business if YouTube is a success. The good news is, we already know that YouTube won't be a success in terms of being a podcast app because Google have tried it for four times and they've screwed up every single time. So we already know that it's not going to work, but it's a frustration that Google have got rid of something which was a good, nice thing for Google to be doing. The Google Podcast app worked with RSS feeds. It appeared in Google Search. It was a really good system. And now they've decided that they want to basically try and kill the industry by moving everything into YouTube Music. I mean, we should be worried, but the good news is that Google will screw this one up too. So we probably don't necessarily need to be.
I love the position. So you heard it here first. YouTube won't hack it into the podcast world. They will fail miserably.
And I should say, you know, that the guys who are working on specifically on the YouTube podcast integration are really good. They've got their, they are podcast people through and through. They're trying to do the best job that they possibly can. The fact that YouTube Music will actually play an RSS feed, if you know how to get an RSS feed into the YouTube Music app, that's amazing. How they managed to get that past the YouTube management, I've got no idea. But that's amazing. So if you really desperately want a podcast app and you don't understand how to install any other software, then YouTube Music will actually work for you. But install another app. AntennaPod is good. It's free. It's open. Use that one.
Love that. So, James, let me challenge this a bit. We've seen, in the podcast space, more and more people using the video. And actually, video is a very good way to retain attention. Like, it's excellent for it, actually. There is a reason why YouTube is that successful. So big podcasters out there, and smaller podcasters as well, start to, as we are right now, right? We are recording with Riverside. Lots of people are recording via Zoom, Zencaster, StreamYard. Let's not make any jealous here. But when you record a podcast nowadays, it's very likely that you're recording with video as well. So what's the harm in uploading it into YouTube? And if you have the right setup, uploading it in Spotify video as well. That being said, if YouTube is the number one on video online, this I think is a given, a no-brainer. And if podcast is leaning that way, is there not a way for YouTube to kind of hack it or like get quite a significant piece of the pie?
There certainly would be. Yes, absolutely. I think that videos and podcasts, they work with podcasts like this. They wouldn't necessarily work with a podcast like Serial. A good piece of innovative storytelling, whether it's Serial, whether it's S-Town, whether it's any other, or a fiction podcast. A fiction podcast in video is called a movie, and that's fine too. But that's difficult to do. So I think video works for interviews, and I think that that's absolutely fine. And what that gives you is it doesn't take away from the benefit of podcasts. And the benefit of podcast is it's an audio first medium. It's something which you don't have to sit and watch a screen for. So I can consume a podcast while I'm driving, the car, while I'm doing the cooking, all manner of other things that I couldn't really consume video for. So from that point of view, yes, most podcasts are being recorded with video, but it's not necessarily adding an awful lot to it. And apart from complication from the creator's point of view, because all of a sudden you need to be a video editor as well as an audio editor, hopefully. So you've got that kind of side to it, I guess. What we've also seen from some of the research which is out there is, for example, Spotify themselves say that most people during the day will listen to audio, and in the evening, then they will watch the video. So it ties in with, when do we want to actually sit down and be enveloped by something? Well, that's normally the evening when we're watching the telly, in comparison to anything else. So so I think from that point of view, I find that fascinating. And I think, but I also think that we worry in podcasting far too much about what video it could possibly do. Most people that I see are using video as a better way of sharing a podcast on things like X, formerly Twitter, on Facebook, on all of those sorts of services, because it's much easier to share video and it kind of works. But actually pointing people towards an audio-only version, and that works absolutely. That's why podcasting is so successful now. That's why, 43% of Americans listen to podcasts, and it's 47% now, listen to podcasts every single month. It is because it's audio. It's an audio-first medium.
I think everything is said. Love that, James. A common question, it's not a common question, it's the question we ask to all our guests towards the end of the interview, is top three podcasts What are the three podcasts that you would recommend anybody to listen?
Man, now you see, you told me that you were going to ask this question.
And you didn't prepare, or did you?
When we talked a while ago, and then I've completely forgotten. But I will tell you, off the top of my head.
More authentic, that's perfect.
I mean, obviously I would mention my own. The Podnews Daily, I'm clearly not allowed to mention that, but you know... But let's mention...
So four podcasts.
But let's mention that one as a start. If you want to hear a great true crime podcast, then one that I always recommend is... it's a co-production between the BBC and NRK in Norway. It's called Death in Ice Valley. It's quite an old show now, but it's well worth a listen to in terms of just understanding, firstly, how to tell a story in a really captivating way, and to do it really well, but also secondly, how to incorporate feedback from your audience. My guess is, and I've not spoken to the people involved with that podcast, but my guess is that they made 90% of the podcast, but didn't finish it until a day before it went out on the RSS feed, so that they could include bits of feedback that they'd got from the audience. I think it's an incredible piece of work. And also, by the way, it's a great listen as well. So Death in Ice Valley is most certainly a thing. I also really enjoy listening to a podcast which is called The Bugle. The Bugle is just three comedians, and they look back at the week's news in a satirical way, and it's been an independent podcast forever. I think it was firstly done by the Times, and then the Times stopped doing that sort of thing. But it's existed, I think, for 15 years now, and is a great example of something which is a really consistent listen. Every single week, you know that you're going to get something, and really well written and works fantastically. So The Bugle is probably the second podcast that I would mention. And the third one, and I'm afraid it's another BBC one, and I'm kind of feeling a bit bad that I'm mentioning three British podcasts.
This show is not sponsored by the BBC, guys, just so you know.
No, and let me tell you, nothing is. We won't be doing that. But, well, I was going to mention Louis Theroux's show, which is a great show, all about busy trying to find its name, because it would be important that I found his name, and it's not Louis Theroux anyway. I was going to mention John Ronson's Things Fall Apart, which is a great listen. Things Fall Apart, it's all about, or Things Fell Apart, if I can give it its actual title, which is all about the culture wars and why people all of a sudden are very anti this and that and the other. Which is a great listen, and you know, I would recommend that, but just by opening my iPhone, I'm going to recommend something else, which is a very strange idea for a podcast. It's a podcast called Lateral. Its full title is Lateral with Tom Scott, and it's a very strange idea for a podcast in that it's a game show. There really aren't too many game shows as podcasts, but it's a really enjoyable game show. It's very difficult to explain how the game show actually works, but it's a complicated question that you have to think laterally to answer. Tom Scott used to be a YouTuber. He's currently taking a break from that, in case you recognize what the name is. But it's a great listen, and it works fantastically well. And again, a great format that very, very few people are actually doing in terms of a podcast. So Lateral with Tom Scott might be my third in that case.
Wow. Now I'm curious and shall give it a go. I like that you haven't recommended... I mean, it seems that on the Things Fell Apart, so it's John is interviewing people, but... You're much more about storytelling and the initial format of podcasts, and not that much into the interview format, if I understand properly, James.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to a podcast and have listened a long time to a podcast by an English comedian called Richard Herring. It's called Rehalestapa. Good luck with that. The Richard Herring Leicester Square podcast, RHLSP. And that's a long form interview podcast done in front of a studio audience, in front of a theatre audience, in fact. And that's been coming out for 10, 15 years as well. And again, the power of consistency, you know, to come back to everything. You know, so I listen to that a fair amount, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's one of my top favorite podcasts. And I think I'm much more interested in, as you say, narrative podcasts, podcasts that have been produced and produced carefully. And I get a little frustrated with some shows which are literally somebody presses record, they make the podcast, they press the stop button, and then they publish it. And there's no editing, there's no thought about, you know, how can I make this into a better experience? How can I be more respectful of my audience's time by getting rid of some of the fluffy, you know, comments that anybody has actually had? So, so I think from that point of view, it's just worthwhile having a think about.
Amazing. All the links will be in the show notes. James, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.